This is Heart of Iowa, where we bring you people and ideas of Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg. On Sunday, March 4th, International Women's Day was celebrated once again in Ames at the Ames Public Library. International Women's Day is a yearly event that is organized by a partnership between many organizations in Ames, and this year those organizations included the Ames Public Library, Access Assault Care Center, Iowa Resource for International Services, KHOI, the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, Wheatfield Co-op, Worldly Goods, and the YWCA at Iowa State University.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mara Spooner. I'm the director down at Worldly Goods. And I'm here to welcome you to Ames Public Library and the International Women's Day event. International Women's Day is not a country or demographic or organization specific. It belongs to all groups everywhere, so that includes you and all of your friends and family. So this year, in light of so many viral movements, including Me Too and Time's Up and Yes All Women, all viral hashtags, the International Women's Day Committee globally chose Press for Progress as our theme this year. So we choose within this theme to work against complacency, to motivate and unite our friends, colleagues, and communities to be all gender inclusive, and to always be intersectional in our activism. Today, our keynote speaker will be Jeanette Colton. So I'm going to tell you a few things about Jeanette if you don't already know her. Jeanette was born and raised in Santiago, Chile, and has made Ames her home since 2000 with her husband Chase in Santiago. She currently works as a Spanish language interpreter at Primary Healthcare, which is a nonprofit community health center dedicated to serving individuals who experience barriers to receiving care. Prior to this, Jeanette was an educational assistant and interpreter for families in the Ames Community School District. She was honored to receive the 2017 Ames Humanitarian Award for her work to build bridges in the community and promote diversity, inclusion, and equity. Inspired to take her community service and activism to the next level, Jeanette was elected to the Ames School Board in the fall of 2017, where she continues to amplify the voice of every child, parent, and teacher in the district. She feels empowered by the growing global movement for gender parity and is honored to participate in today's International Women's Day event. So please help me welcome Miss Jeanette Colton.
Well, my dream has come true. Having Mara introduce me, that's a big deal. If you know Mara, that's a big deal. I am nervous. I think it would be goofy if I wasn't nervous. So driving here, nervous and late, rawr, it was a little, but I'm here. We're all here. We're safe. That's good. So the theme for this event is Press for Progress. So I will tell you my story. That's what I've got. And you will see that over my life, I have always pressed for progress. So I want you to see yourself when I tell my story. I want you to, after this, listen to my story. Don't like start daydreaming. But after you listen to my story, I want you to connect with your own narrative. What is your story, and how have you pressed for progress for yourself and for those women around you? So, like Mara said, I was born and raised in Santiago, Chile. I was born in dictatorship. The dictatorship had already started 5 years prior to when I was born, so it was the thick of it when I was a young girl. I lived in a neighborhood that was politically charged. If you look it up, you can still look it up. It's called Villa Portales. It is politically involved, eclectic as can be. It's just a collection of buildings. There are 19 buildings, giant, probably 150 apartments in each building, and they're all connected. Initially, they were going to be connected by bridges, but then they ran out of money, so that didn't work out. But that's where I was born. I lived in this environment, so I was born in this resistance. And I didn't know any better. At a young age, I knew the words solidarity. I knew oppression. Those were the words that I lived by. I knew injustice. I know reprisal. Do you know that word? It's that represalia. We know it. We knew if we had a tough night of resistance, we were going to pay for it the next day and the next by not having power. It was scary. It was very scary. I was a young girl living in this situation that is just scary. The good guys, the police, they're the people that I'm afraid of. I was okay with the criminals in our town, but the police, I was terrified of them. I remember as a young girl, we walked because of the smoke. What did they call it? The gas, the tear gas. We walked around. All of us kids had a kit. We had a survival kit. We walked in our backpack. We would put lemons and salt because it counteracts the tear gas. I remember walking, and all of a sudden, it was just a bunch of us kids, and there's this tear gas that explode right next to it. We're like, who threw that? It was a tank that it was just going by, and they thought it was funny to throw it at a bunch of kids walking around. And we were prepared, and that was the thing about us. We knew that we had no choice to do anything else other than be prepared. So what did we do? We take our packs, and the lemon and the salt, and we're like, see, we were all crying, but we were prepared. We knew that was how it was. Just sometimes it was hard. Sometimes you were just like, should I go outside? Yes, go outside. It was just, you had no choice. That's the truth of it. So it might seem like it was a courageous thing to do, which it was, but it also was all we had. Right? That we had to fight to end this. I remember one day we're playing cards in the apartment, and I felt this push that I went across the room, and I thought, what was it? And we were all kind of like, what just happened? So there were apartment buildings, right? About too far from us, there was a bomb. They went off, and we went outside. There were deaths. They were targeting the young kids. They were targeting because they were organizing, and they were fearful of them. So there was a bomb that went off, and I just remember that made me want to fight even more so. It was scary, but I knew what it had to be done. Everyone there knew what had to be done. I knew that resistance was stronger. There was this thing that the kids we did all the time. We would run because there were murals. Like every time there was a group, they did these murals that it was penalized. They could go to jail because of it. So every morning, like on a Saturday, because we knew they would do it Friday night, we would run out and we looked at these murals, and all of us were running around town, like around our neighborhood, these murals. And we looked at them. And then we would see the police come and white paint. And it was this game, right? They were painted, and then this crew would come, and they would have a better one that they did the weekend before. And then they would paint it, and all of us kids were like, who's going to win, right? And then sometimes they stayed and were like, there's hope. There's hope. They are giving up sooner than we are. So it was just this back and forth ever since I was little. So with that was that life, but also life at home was very chaotic. I lived with my mom, my two sisters, and my grandfather, who was a wonderful man when he was sober. But when he was drunk, he was a deranged drunk. He hated women. He hated women and lived with three of them. And he was offensive. He came home yelling. Some nights we didn't sleep. We just like, I guess it's the show tonight. So he would just yell and we'll tune it out. It was just this terrible, abusive situation that we couldn't escape. We were homeless. If he kicked us out, we had nothing. So we just kind of like, okay, we'll just live with this. And we did. We did. He was awful. He was an amazing man when he was not drunk, but he was drunk a lot of the time. And I remember one day, it got so bad. It was this, I don't remember. I was like 8 years old. And I thought, what's happening? It was this weird, he was kind of grabbing my mom. And I told my sister, I was like, I am going to kill him. And I was 8 years old. And she's six. And she's like, okay, right? Do it. And I was like, okay. So I go to my room and I get a shoe. And I was like, I'm just going to hit him with it. And she's like, okay. Like a six-year-old and an eight-year-old was like, you got a plan, just do it. So I somehow, he was tall. I aim, and I hit him in the head. He was drunk. I hit him in the head. He falls down, passes out. I killed him, right? And I was like, oh my. And my mom is like, let's take him. They knew, but they didn't know my plan. So they knew what had happened, but they didn't know that I thought I actually had killed a man. So my sister and I was like, okay, I guess that's over with, right? So the next morning, he gets up. We're like, phew, I didn't want to kill him. But it was this, like, love-hate, right? We love him, but he was so hard. He would disappear. He would disappear for weeks, and he wouldn't show up. But we had, and this is how we press for progress, we had laughter. We laughed all the time. We laughed about it. My mom is funny, but accidentally funny. She would, like, Jim Carrey has nothing on her. She falls down, but like for reals, right? But she's funny, so we're all laughing. And she, like, had this routine, and I then became like, I have my own routine. So we were just, we had this laughter. I developed this thing that I haven't had it in a long time. I couldn't cry. I had a knot in my, they call it a knot in your throat. I don't know if you've ever felt that. It's, you just can't cry. You want to cry and you can't. And I had that. And I had it as a child. So it was known as like, she can't cry. But I laughed. I laughed so hard. I could do that. That was my press for progress. I made other people laugh. I love that. I love attention, as you could probably tell. So I just wanted to reel it back a little bit. We all are doing something in our daily life, how to press forward. My mom just could have not gone to work. We could have just like, we're giving up. This is too hard. But we didn't. We didn't because in spite of all of this, we did enjoy life. There was something about life that it was so beautiful. We had friends. We had each other. We really didn't have much. We were hungry a lot. I went to bed hungry. I got up and stayed hungry. And I know hunger, right? I just know it. And I have this goofy relationship with food now because of that. There was just something about, call it resilience, call it love, call it whatever, call it press for progress. You have it. We all have it. And, so I did that, right? I kept pressing on. One day, when I was 13 years old, my mom said, we're moving. And I was like, I don't want to move. I had my friends. She's like, we're moving. And my grandfather didn't know we were moving, so we escaped, right? He left, and we left. He didn't know where we went. We went farther away than this town that I had loved. And I remember, like if it was yesterday, I remember that night. I think we had one bed and maybe a couch, and we shared it, the four of us. And I don't ever remember. There's nothing else in this. Like, there's this house with nothing. We didn't have a stove. We didn't have a refrigerator. We had nothing. We had the clothes that we were wearing. And I remember it was the best night of sleep I've ever had. I knew he wasn't going to come home. I knew he wasn't going to yell. And the yelling was awful. He hated women. So he was, the language was definitely not appropriate for girls to hear. And their rhetoric, right? Like, this is what women are. This is what women do. Women are trouble. Women, it was this thing, right? Like, this story that he was feeding us when he was drunk. But then when he wasn't, it was this amazing, like, you can conquer the world. So it's like, and I feel like this is what happens to women in general. Like, in one hand, you're told you're a disaster, and the other one, you're like, you're everything. You give birth, right? So it was this very, the duplicity of that relationship was hard. But that night, we slept so well. We were at peace for that moment, right? So it was just, we were stronger because of what had happened. And I don't want you to be, pity is the last thing I want from anybody, right? But I just want people to know that there's strength in that, right? There's beauty on that, all of that that was so ugly. There's this, it's hard to explain what that is. It's this strength that it's stronger than anything you can think of, really. This desire for to leave that, yet you gotta keep it alive. I have to keep all of that alive to move on, to keep, because I know there are people that are suffering more than I ever was. I know that my story, it's a lot. It's who I am. It's how I look at friendships. It's how I see my friends, and I love them because they give me so much. So, I'm in high school. So we're no longer in dictatorship. We are, we call it transition. So it's going from dictatorship to, a democratic government. But this is when people become impatient. They want justice. They want it now. They want to find their detenidos desaparecidos, which is their detained and disappeared. Many people in Chile disappear and they were never found. Everybody wants justice. They want Pinochet in jail. So it's the uprising. After being held back for so long, your voice is stronger. My voice was stronger. I grew bolder. I felt like I had lived in this neighborhood that nothing ever happened to me, that I could push the buttons. And that's what I did. I remember clearly as day, we are waiting for this trial. This trial, all of us kids, we're high school kids, wearing our uniforms. We go after school, like at 1:30, we go and we wait for this trial. And then every single time, every protest ended badly. So it ends badly, and we have to run. You run from the police, and we're all running. And I'm running for my life. And I feel this police officer, he had me. He had me, and I thought, oh, my gosh, being a woman, detained, not a good thing. It's not a respectful thing. And if you're a young woman, and I just thought, oh my goodness, and my life just like my mom. And my first thought was like, my mom is gonna kill me. She doesn't know I'm here. I shouldn't be here. So I ran, and then all of a sudden, this dude out of the blue comes, grabs my hand, takes off. My feet are not touching the ground. I don't know what's happening. He is flying. So we just make it to a bus station, and it turns out he was like a lead band for a very popular band in Chile. I was like the lead singer, and I was like, thank you. He's like, we're going to write a song about you. I was like, you do that. I got to go. So I come home, tell nobody. My mom is like, how was your day? Great. I did not get almost put in jail. That did not happen. So I forget it. I'm like, done. The next day, I went to an all-girls school. I go to the bathroom, and the girls are freaking out because they saw it. They heard me, that I had been saved by a dude. And I was like, yeah, but I saved myself, right? I was like, I saved myself. His role was a little bit small. I ran faster. That narrative also was interesting that it didn't matter that I was there. It was that someone popular had saved me. So it's that thing about women, right? We're always overshadowed by the actions of a man. So I thought it was interesting. Then another time, also in a protest, I should not have been, I come home and I'm limping. My mom is like, what happened to you? It's like, PE was so hard today. And she's like, okay, well, that's not true. PE, I don't even remember if I went. I had running from the police again. There was this police officer on a horse. He was chasing me. He whipped me on my buns. And I still remember, like if I see it, it was like a giant. It might as well have been a dragon because it was just this dragon and a horse. And I remember, I just was like, oh gosh. And he goes, and whips me. And I jumped and I took up. And he laughed. He's just like, he didn't have to do it. He just did it because I was there. It was the power. And it was just this. So he probably is like, she's never going to do it again. All that does, you will do it even more because you're going to show them that nothing is going to stop you. Nothing is going to stop you. You got to keep pressing on. So I did that for a little while. Then I was like, maybe I should organize something. So I just want to tell you, like, the levels of activism that you can touch, right? Like, you can be the rowdy. You can kind of drop it for a little bit. So there's levels of activism. And you, in that role, you think, like, is this working? And then I realize it's not working for me. I'm just getting hurt. And they're just finding pleasure in hurting me. So I kind of settled on that. Then I had the opportunity to come to the U.S., when I was 17 years old, I was invited to live with a family in Iowa City, and I said yes. I was always curious about the world. I was curious about other languages. I wanted to learn a different language. I didn't know how to. I only knew Spanish, barely. No, I know it well. Some people can testify. Santos, I speak Spanish, right? Yes. Karen. Bien. So I decided, I was like, yes, I'll come and live. And my mom told me, she said, you're going to do great. You have a way with people. And I was like, that's kind of goofy. I mean, letting your 17-year-old go to a different country, doesn't know anybody, doesn't even know the language. But I was like, thank you. So I came, and I loved it. It was very hard. For the first year, I think I cried every night. Not because the family was mean. It's just I missed it. It was hard. It was hard. I had to. I got in trouble for everything. It felt like back home in Chile, every time we say hi to somebody, men or women, we kiss in the cheek. Well, you don't do that here, right? So I was making a pass at everybody. Apparently, I didn't know that, right? So people high five. People that know me, I don't high five. I'm terrified of high fiving. I can't aim. I can't aim, and I need the touch. So when I high five, I want to hold on to the hand. That's awkward. You don't do that. You just walk away. So it's just this weird things that people did, and I was like, I guess I will do what they do. Time passed. I loved the family. I did a back and forth, Chile and here. I met the love of my life. I married him. He put up with me. He's awesome. He's definitely the person to be. He's not the leader of the pack. He's just very empowering. He's a safe man. I always say he's a safe man. He is this man that I get to be myself. I get to be neurotic. I get to be crazy. I get to yell. He's never heard me yell. I say, Chase. And he's like, why are you yelling at me? You don't know yelling. Mm-mm. He doesn't know yelling. He's still, 17 years later, he still does not know yelling. But So in the meantime, in all that happened, I was working in getting used to this country, getting my crew, getting my tribe, fitting in, trying a trial and error, trying something that didn't work, trying something else. So I went back and forth with all of that internal work and making connections. And there was always that activist, right? That dormant activist. I quieted that voice, but once in a while it would surface, but I didn't feel safe. I wasn't a citizen. Instead I volunteered, I helped, I listened, but there was always something in me that it was uneasy, that I felt like I didn't have the same voice that someone that was a citizen did. So I finally became a citizen. I became a citizen in 2014. 3 years later, short 3 years later, I became an elected official. That's crazy. That is crazy. You become a citizen in 2014, September 2017, you're elected. It is an honor. I love Ames. I cannot tell you how much I love Ames. I have been empowered. I have been loved. I don't know. Like, the people that I surround myself, the people that I'm fortunate to have, I genuinely love everybody. I do. I love this town. I love what it's done for me. I love the library. Tell Mary you have an idea. She's like, I got this. We'll do it. You'll do it. You have this beautiful room. It's just, I love running into people. I loved running into people at London, at the store. I just love running into people everywhere. I really love what this town has done to me and what it has empowered me, and it has empowered me in different levels to keep pushing forward and to do what I like to do the best, which is help others, advocate for others. And I want to ask you that question, like, how are you using your voice, your narrative, that story that you have, those things that they're not pretty stories, the things that are really fun stories? How are you using that voice to advocate for others and for yourself? I had, because after I got elected, I've been meeting with a lot of leaders from the community, and I met with this gentleman. He told me, I voted for you. I was like, thank you. But I thought, she's too nice. They will eat her up. This was his words, like, clearly, you don't know where I'm come from, but okay. And you know, that's the thing about women. What's so bad about being nice? I'm nice and I'm proud of it. I'm kind and I'm proud of it. I'm fierce and I am proud of that. I am mighty and I'm proud of that. Be proud of who you are. You have it. You have it in you. I want to see it. This is it. This is our life. We get to live it the way we want it. You get to have your story, your amazing, beautiful story. You will tell it. It will help you help others. Be mighty. Be fierce. Be kind. I love you all. Thank you.
Aquí, ahora, en todo lo que hago.
You are listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. Last Sunday, March 4th, International Women's Day was celebrated at the Ames Public Library. We have just heard Jeanette Colton, keynote speaker. After Jeanette spoke, participants in the event came to the KHOI listening spot where they recorded their own thoughts and ideas. We'd like to share some of those with you now.
Hi, my name is Shannon, and I'm 43 years old, and I live in Ames, Iowa. I would like to see the world as equal in pay and in workforce. I would also like women to feel as though their opinions and stories mean as much as the males around them. I want us to feel joy in all we do, whether it's working or writing or being an artist, being the parent that chooses to stay at home full-time with their kids. We are an enormous part of the world. And we should all be happy and joyful for every single thing that we are chosen for and every single thing that we do on a daily basis. Thank you.
Well, I'm 14, and some equality that I face is in physical education. In my class, girls and boys are separated because the teacher thinks girls won't do as much or as good as the boys. Like, every girl in the class is put under the label as not good enough. Boys have the opportunity to play more competitively, and the girls are pushed to the side. Seeing girls in an equal standpoint to boys would be highly beneficial to my generation.
This is Cornelia Flora, and our International Women's Day asks us the question, when did you first realize that males were treated differently than females? And it was when I was in the second grade, and the boys could become Cub Scouts, but you couldn't become a Brownie till the third grade. And I resented that so much. I didn't want to be a boy. I didn't want to be a Cub Scout. I wanted Brownies to be available for girls. In high school, if you were athletic at all, you basically had one choice, tennis. So I played tennis. But the boys in high school had a choice of about 10 intervarsity sports. And began thinking, why is it that girls get stuck with few choices and they're all those available to boys? We took this readiness test to prepare us for careers. And of course, the girls took the pink sheet and the boys took the blue sheet. I came back, explained to me that I should be a social worker because I just wasn't very competitive. And I thought, you know, I can beat most of the boys on the tennis team. I think I'm pretty competitive. But this was sort of the channeling you into careers that fit your gender, I found extraordinarily annoying. And so when I went to my advisor at UCLA, who sat back and said, okay, you're interested in sociology. Well, you're a woman. You should go into marriage and the family. And I thought to myself, I will never take a course in marriage and the family. So there's this sort of this resentment of being treated differently.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Hope. I live here in Ames, Iowa. I will be 32 in a couple of weeks. I have been the Iowa Resource for International Service representative on the International Women's Day Coalition, and I've been doing this since 2008, so it's been about 10 years, and we kind of formed our coalition of organizations just a few years ago. I am just so honored to be part of this coalition and honored that the city of Ames continues to support this event, and I always learn a lot and I get to meet great people, so I hope it just gets bigger and bigger. When I was in high school, I was the oldest, and everything was very strict for me. There were very early curfews, and I got punished for being even 1 second late. When my brother got into high school with me, he didn't have the curfews. He didn't have the punishments. And I asked my mom and dad why that was, and my dad said, well, you're a girl, and he's a boy. And I said, What does that matter about a curfew? What does that matter in our small town? What's going to happen to me that wouldn't happen to him? He said, well, boys treat girls badly, so I need you to come home early. And I said, what boys? What boys treat girls badly? He said, well, boys that stay out, boys that don't have curfews. And I said, like my brother. And that made my dad stop and pause, and he was angry that I had bested him in that conversation, things did not change between my curfew rules and my brother's curfew rules, but I like to think that maybe I gave my dad something to consider. It just started getting me thinking and noticing how things were different between me and my classmates. It opened my eyes a bit.
I would want to see a world where everyone is accepting and no one denies anyone opportunities, where all doors are open for women, people of color, LGBTQ+ members, and anyone else who, in today's world, can be denied of opportunities to be great or to be themselves. I think we should strive for a world where differences are valued and respected instead of shut down or pushed away.
Hi, my name is Annie Almquist. I am 39. I live in Ames, Iowa. In the 39 years here, I think I'm not so much going to talk about inequality or feminism, but a need that I've been seeing over and over again, and really that's the need for social-emotional learning. So alongside our math and our literacy and our science and social studies, I would love to see some social-emotional skills built into our daily curriculum for our kids. What kids are really yearning for is that sense of belonging and love, and to know that they're worthy of it. And so if we can teach ourselves and kids strategies to get to that point, we would be doing everybody, not even a service, because I think it's just a basic human right, is that sense of belonging, that sense of love, and the feeling of greatness is within everybody's reach. So
you are listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. Last Sunday, March 4th, International Women's Day was celebrated at the Ames Public Library. We have just heard Jeanette Colton, keynote speaker. After Jeanette spoke, participants in the event came to the KHOI listening spot where they recorded their own thoughts and ideas.
In the Navy, I was an aircraft mechanic, and I was responsible for my own toolbox. I had no problem carrying my own toolbox, and I was asked if I needed help with my toolbox. You know, and they were constantly checking on me, making sure I could do this, and I'm like, I got this, guys. When I went to buy my first car on my own, I mentioned to my supervisor that I was going to go buy a car, and his first, oh, do you need help? I want to make sure that you don't get taken. And I'm like, really? Do you think I can't do this on my own? And then when I actually did go out shopping, yeah, because I was a mechanic, I had an idea of the mechanics of things, and I'd help my dad on the farm fixing tractors and stuff. And I would be looking at something, and I go, this doesn't look so good. And he goes, oh, it's fine, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, excuse me? That's not what I see. And then they would say something else that, you know, was like trying to make me sound like I didn't know what I was talking about. You know, I'd be like, I'm an aircraft mechanic with the United States Navy. Oh.
My name is Jan. I live in Rural Story County. And women hold up half the sky. We are not less than. We're not the same as men in all respects, but we have individual gifts and talents that need to be respected, that need to be shared with the world. We need to be seen as equals. And my one grandmother was a school teacher. My other grandmother also went to college and was a home economist. So a long lineage of smart women, capable women, and strong women. I've been a feminist pretty much since the first time I heard the word. I went to a college, majored in the biological sciences. I protested for the ERA when I was in college, and then I ended up raising two daughters myself, and they've both been to college, and nowadays we go to the protests together. My mom helped me understand women's power. She majored in chemistry in the 1940s, and worked as a quality control chemist for Sherwin-Williams in Chicago. She had loved being out in the country, loved having the animals, so we bought a small hobby farm, 36 acres. And she was pretty much the farmer. She took care of the horses and the sheep and ducks, geese, chickens, all the animals we had. And her philosophy was it didn't matter if you were a boy or a girl. If you rode the horses, you helped bale the hay, you helped feed them in the winter. No excuses. And the boys also helped with things like washing dishes in the house. We didn't grow up thinking that boys were different or special. And she never called herself a feminist, but she showed me what it is.
My first thought was, I envision a world where women have an equally respected voice in the home, community, nation, and world. And a lot of that comes from the way I grew up. My mom is a driving force for me to stand up for myself and do what's right. My parents got engaged in June of 1965 or May of 1965, somewhere in there. And then within a couple of weeks, my mom figured out she was pregnant with me. They got married in July of 1965. And at that time, women were not allowed to be in school if they were married, let alone pregnant. So my mom was not allowed to return for her senior year and get her diploma. Over the next year, while she was pregnant and shortly after I was born, she, my dad, and her parents petitioned the school board and fought the school board to get my mom the privilege of going back to high school and getting her diploma, not just her GED, but her diploma. And so she graduated from Atlantic High School in 1967. You know, that's an inspiring story for me. The other thing I thought of with that is I envision a world where women are free from sexual harassment and violence. And I come by that because I'm a victim of that locker room talk, that verbiage that so many of them seem to play off, like, it's no big deal, it's just locker room talk. Well, sometimes that locker room talk gets out of hand, and innocent young women and even young men are sexually abused and harassed. And I was violently abused, sexually abused by guys that started out with locker room talk. So I think if we can end the locker room talk and get them to see that we are human beings and we all deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, I think our world would be a much better place. We could put an end to not only the sexual violence here in the United States, but Africa and the Asian, you know, anywhere in the world, put an end to that. And I think the world would be a much better place if we just treated each other with love and dignity and respect.
By today's definition, my mother would be somebody who considered part of the feminist, and we're talking about 60 years ago back in Iran. One of the things she would do was to go and save the women who were unfortunate enough to fall victim in the hand of the pimps and woman trafficking. She had formed a group of women with same-minded like herself. They would go and buy the woman from their pimps, and they would help them to be educated. They would help them with their medical issue, and eventually they would bring them into the group of the women who were well-known and reputable within the town. So those women would be empowered, part of the society, and they are not discarded. My mother and her friend, they were able to basically do matchmaking and find suitable husband for those women. She was strong in so many ways. Number one, because she was educated for her time, and she was a teacher at a very young age. When she started to teach French and middle school, she was only 14 years old. She was a gifted woman.
In many occasions, I very much can get away with things because being a man, and navigate better the system for being a man. I'm able to do all these things because I'm a man. Sometimes I say to myself, it's the way it is. It's good anyway, but it's not. the whole system is designed by men for men, which is unfair. Obviously, the history and the stories of women are the history of oppression, basically. In this patriarchal society, women have always been relegated, abused, oppressed. I think the whole story needs to be rewritten and re-understand from women's perspective. But you can't celebrate women without men, and vice versa. We're just in the same struggle.
My parents had a very egalitarian marriage. They raised me to think for myself and not let anybody define me. And this is growing up in rural Southwest Iowa. We lived on the farm, and I liked being outside. I liked doing the physical stuff, so I was allowed to make that choice. So I did that. But then in my free time, I would spend time with my mom in the kitchen, and I learned how to cook and make bread and can. And my mom is a driving force for me to stand up for myself and do what's right. I envision a world where women have an equally respected voice in the home, community, nation, and world. I've had other women say, all but saying, I'm awful because I'm a feminist. It's a charged word. And I think some of that is not everybody understands what the word feminism means. Having the freedom to choose what your role is in the world, in the community, in your home.
You've been listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. Today we've heard voices from the International Women's Day celebration held in Ames, Iowa on Sunday, March 4th at the Ames Public Library. Thank you to everyone who so openly and sincerely shared their thoughts and ideas in the KHOI listening spot at the International Women's Day event. Jeanette Colton was the keynote speaker. She is a local community leader and activist who emigrated from Chile as a young adult. Partners organizing the International Women's Day included the Ames Public Library, Access Assault Care Center, Iowa Resource for International Service, KHOI Community Radio, the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, Wheatsfield Co-op, Worldly Goods, and the YWCA Ames Iowa State University. Thank you for listening to Heart of Iowa.